Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Good evening, everybody. This is Jack. I'm joined by Jan Lambrecht tonight, and we will be discussing land reform. Welcome to the stream, Jan.
Hi there, Jack. It's nice to be on the stream. And this will be going out on History Reviewed and African Crisis as well afterwards. So it's good to get back to chatting with you after that other interview that we did together, because there were some interesting things that went down there. Do you want to touch base a little bit on the Russian and Chinese stuff that arrived today?
Yeah, I have not looked into that myself yet, but it is interesting. I think that you can inform us a bit more, maybe. I received the message literally like, when I received it, I sent it to you. So I haven't really had time to look into that. But I'm sure I can toss around a few ideas. To all the guys listening to the stream, share this around. And I think a lot of people, this has been long awaited. A lot of people always ask when me and Jan are going to get together for a stream. So thank you for to Vimerica for setting us up in the first place. And then again, spread it around and have the people come that would be interested in listening to this. We're going to be discussing specifically land reform and then also the Russian military arriving in South Africa. So would you like to lead on that one maybe?
Yeah. I was just having a quick look. I saw the ships coming in. I saw film footage of the ships coming in. And I thought it's just maybe worth just a few comments, not something to hang on to for too long. And we also had the Russian Air Force here a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? Didn't they come to Swartkop or wherever? Didn't a Russian bomber land here in Pretoria?
Yes, I heard that. And what I also heard is that the Russians colonialized, apparently they annexed Zimbabwe. Is what I've been hearing amongst people, or Rhodesia then, if you will. I don't know if you know anything about that.
No, you'd need to give me more details.
Yes.
What you got to understand in terms of the history, and this is where I noticed that some of the people, even here in South Africa, don't quite understand. They don't quite understand that the so-called liberation wars of Africa were all actually driven mostly by the Russians and the Chinese. Especially in the end, the Russians were the main players. But Russia and China were actually the ones who drove all the wars. I don't know if you've ever studied it, because this is a topic from my 50 years of race war in Africa, which I'm going to be putting out as a video. And all the wars that took place in Angola, Mozambique, Rhodesia, Southwest Africa, now Namibia, and South Africa, all of these wars were sponsored mostly by Russia and China. But Russia was actually the main player all the time. And China's big win was actually Zimbabwe. Because ZANU-PF, who are the one-party state in Zimbabwe, they are Chinese. They were sponsored by the Chinese. The Russians and Chinese sponsored the wars in Southern Africa, and mostly the Russians were the main movers and shakers in these wars. But the Chinese also played a role right from the beginning. The big win for the Chinese was Zimbabwe. The government of Zimbabwe today was actually armed and sponsored by the Chinese. ZANU-PF, who ruled Zimbabwe, were sponsored by the Chinese. And the Chinese set them up in Mozambique. They armed them. They had different tactics. The Russians and Chinese fought with different tactics in Southern Africa. The Russians tried to make the blacks fight like a proper army, and the Chinese taught the blacks more guerrilla and terrorist warfare. And when Mugabe came to power and ZANU-PF came to power in Zimbabwe, Chinese flooded into Zimbabwe for quite a few years. And the Chinese tend to come and go in southern Africa. I don't think that they can survive among the blacks that long themselves. And but the Chinese are the main player in saving Zimbabwe. And to this day, the Zimbabwe government deals with the Chinese. But you've got to remember that the ANC of South Africa, all of these governments were sponsored by the same people. They even were in the same camps. So ANC Absolutely, people yes. and ZANU people were in the same military camps. So they know the Russians, they know the Chinese. And you'll see that South Africa also, even under Zuma, had this turn to China kind of policy. But that's because these blacks are looking for guns. President Nixon of America, he actually wrote a great book called The Real War. And Nixon actually was a good guy who got a bad name because the Jews really wanted to get rid of him. And Nixon, in his book, The Real War, he wrote that the Russians want a race war in South Africa. That's what he said. And he also said that where the Russians have the upper hand on the West is that the Russians know that the blacks need weapons. And the Russians don't have a problem selling weapons to anybody. They don't have any moral restraints. Of course, the question has arisen, and it's a question I have even, is what would happen if the Boers wanted to buy guns from the Russians? And it's actually something that, I actually know someone who was a spy who actually worked for the Russians, a German, can you believe, from East Germany. And I actually asked him the question. I said to him, you know, what do you think the chances are if we wanted to get guns from the Russians, you know?
Would they be willing? But I have dabbled in those same waters many times, thinking to myself, because the thing is, the Russians are working towards an end. And the Americans and the Chinese, all of these people, they don't see South Africa through the same context as, and I think that's where a lot of people fall off the bus, so to speak, in South Africa when it comes to viewing these wars in Angola and in the rest of Africa, is we think from a different perspective than with the Russians and with the Americans, or the Chinese even, when they look at our country and when they look at our continent. So it's very evident that the Russians and the Chinese are moving in on Africa right now. And what's also interesting about the things that you said is that, yes, the Russians sponsor and they trained all of the people within the ANC, but the Americans and the Jews usurped some of those guys in the ANC, and that's why there is now a faction war within the ANC, and there's two sides, one representing Russia and then of course one representing the British, United States. Sorry,
can you hear me? The Americans and the British and the West are basically trying to there's a term for it. I actually wrote about this a long time ago. The term is moderation. The Western world is basically trying to take these black communists and is trying to moderate them. They're even trying to do it with Malema. But I suspect that Jews are also busy playing a double-double game as well.
And that's an excellent point, yes.
And you know what? But you know what the key thing is that absolutely everybody is going to the blacks, the Americans, the Russians, the Chinese, yes, the Jews. Everyone's going to the blacks, and nobody's saying, excuse me, don't the whites have power? Couldn't the whites be a military force? And everybody pretends like we don't exist, but we do exist. And we could still pack a big fucking punch. So I still think that if we can just get our unity sorted out, that we could do some things. I'll add as a subset of this. despite our hatred of the Russians and the Russians being the prime movers in the war against us, the idea of dealing with the Russians, the first time I heard that, actually came from a Rhodesian author who wrote about his own experiences in the war. This Rhodesian said that he thought that if the whites of South Africa offered Simonstown Naval Base to the Russians, that maybe it could be some kind of a deal that the Russians would grab, you know, and, you know, maybe one could work out some kind of deal with the Russians, because our friends, the Western world, are actually often stabbing us in the back, never actually assisting.
Oh, that's true. That I have to interject now, Jan. I absolutely have to agree with you. War. Sorry, I have to make a point on that, where you say that the West is stabbing us in the back. It is a very important point, and I want to illustrate this by telling you about AgriSA and also the infamous tweet about that Donald Trump made not too long ago, right? I want to go through this article about the U.S. urging more transparency on land reform in South Africa. Okay, welcome again, Jan. So I just quickly want to go over this article in March 2019. So, as very infamously Trump said, he sent officials after his tweet in 2018, which he said that he's going to investigate the land expropriation and also farm murders in South Africa. Now, John Sullivan and Mike Pompeo and amongst others came to South Africa investigating this, right? So here comes the article. U.S. urges more transparency on land reform in South Africa. Visiting Deputy Secretary of the State John Sullivan said there is misinformation in Washington. The debate on land reform has not translated well in the U.S., and investors are looking for more transparency from the South African government, that it will not hurt the economy, says U.S. Deputy Secretary of State John Sullivan. Addressing the media on Friday evening in Rosebank following talks with officials, Sullivan said a number of issues were discussed. Land reform has gotten significant attention, but there is a lot of misinformation in the U.S. I don't think it has translated well across the ocean and been covered with the depth and perspective that is necessary. U.S. President Donald Trump weighed into the land debate last year in a late-night tweet in which he said that he asked the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, to look into the land and farm seizures and the large-scale killings of farmers in South Africa. Trump's comment drew a backlash from the South African government, which said he was misinformed and led the rand weakening 1.5%. The U.S., one of South Africa's biggest investors and trade partners, was one of the five countries that highlighted the need for investment security and regulatory certainty in the discussion document last year that was drawn up to contribute to the debate on boosting foreign direct investment. The document was leaked to the media and sparked a diplomatic incident earlier this year. My message on behalf of the U.S. is, in addressing this complex issue, that it be done in a transparent way so that both the agricultural sector and the economy generally are significantly adversely affected by a non-transparent process which reduces investors' confidence and reduces South Africans' confidence, Sullivan said. This will promote confidence in South Africa and the South African economy. So, quickly, before I ask you what your I'm not going to finish the article just now. I want to share a few thoughts on this. So, the Red Meat Production Organization in South Africa had this campaign where they visited all the farmers in the rural areas in South Africa, as well as the AgriSR, which is a very renowned or the biggest agricultural union in South Africa. And I had a few people that is worth mentioning. Rolf Meyer.
A man I have no respect for. A piece of dog shit from the time of de Klerk. Rolf Meyer, one of the biggest scumbags of the last government that we had, white government.
Exactly. But hear this. Previous minister of, Foreign Affairs, Pik Botha's son, Rolf Botha, is the leading economist telling the farmers that they should trust Ramaphosa's economic plan, especially when it comes to land reform. Because he says that Ramaphosa is first and foremost a capitalist that understands the economy.
You carry on, I'll comment afterwards.
He's a capitalist that understands the economy. Therefore, we need to rally behind Ramaphosa because he has the best interests of the farmers and the of the economy, therefore the farmers in South Africa, right? This sentiment is mirrored by AgriSR, the red meat production, and basically any agricultural organization in South Africa. Who else do they have? They have got a political analyst, Dirk Kotze, which works and has Julius Malema in one of his classes, which said to the Boers that they need not fear Julius Malema so much anymore because he is being de-radicalized as he is transitioning into an intellectual with his grade that he is doing with his doctorate that he is pursuing right now. Now, what is noteworthy of this is the biggest theft in our country's history is about to take place in the agricultural sector. And there are many contributing factors to farmers not paying attention to it. I'd say years of subversion, low morale, and also the drought are causing farmers to not pay attention as they should to this thing that's about to take place. But they're shaping our minds. And I love the point that you made that the farmers are constantly not reckoned in South Africa. So 100%, the farmers are an extreme force to be dealt with. That's why they trade with extreme caution when dealing with us. That's why they use these terrorist campaigns of farm murders where they intimidate us and mutilate our farmers to get us away from the farming sector and to demoralize us so that we are not a community. Their campaign is against unity within the farming sector because that is the core of the Boer identity, is the farming sector in South Africa. So I'm gonna ask you to give some of your thoughts before I continue, Jan.
Yeah, see, farming in the wars that took place here in Southern Africa, the farmers were the people who were attacked the most. And it happened not just in South Africa, it happened in Rhodesia, it was very intense. And these guys have to have looked at us and seen where could there be a problem. I'm absolutely convinced. I'm totally convinced that they have realized that the white right wing often has rural beginnings. And they must have seen this in other countries. I know that the Nazis in Germany came from Bavaria. And even in America, look at the rural areas. Now gigantic corporations are taking them over. But you'll find the hardcore people are in the rural areas. And in South Africa, the Boer is legendary for being resistant. And he's sitting there on his farm. He's got his own property. He can do things quietly on his farm. All the white right-wing organizations in South Africa all start in the rural areas. That must be the main reason why they're going after the farmers. They recognize that these white racists sitting in the rural areas are dangerous. They've got weapons. They will organize. They will fight. If you go look at all the right wing, AWB and everybody, they all come from the same towns, tiny little towns sitting far away from the cities. Ventersdorp, I think it is, and so forth. That is where these people come from. And they must see that, you know what, we're going to have a problem.
Sorry, Jan, we lost you again. They must see.
Farmers.
Sorry, Jan, we lost you again. Can you repeat from they must see?
They must surely have seen that if there's going to be a revolution in South Africa, that it's going to come from the rural areas and it will come from the farmers. And that is the real reason why they go after them. Now, in my book, Government by Deception, which I don't think you've seen, but I have begun spreading it again lately. And people who've started reading it, they've started saying, wow, there's a lot of stuff in there. But in Government by Deception, which I wrote 18 years ago, I explained to people that you got to understand that the way that a communist thinks, the way that the Russians and Chinese and Jews have taught these blacks, they have taught these blacks how to play a game of deception. These blacks themselves are not actually naturally that deceptive. They will lie when they need to lie, but they're not deeply deceptive by themselves. However, the communists and Jews have taught them how to be extremely deceptive. And so there's a point that I want to make with regard to land seizure. And the point is this, that when these blacks come at you and they say to you, well, you see, we've got this land problem and the people need the farms, and what they're actually coming at you with is they're coming at you with a storyline, a cover story. They are coming at you with a deception, and they're saying to you they are creating a fake, they're inventing a fake problem. And then they tell you the fake answer to the fake problem. So they say, you see, our people, they need the land and they want to farm. And therefore, you know, we've got to take your land. So please, will you just give it to them? And then they will farm and they'll be happy. They know that their own people, A, aren't interested in farming, B, cannot farm, nobody really cares. But the real reason they're coming at you is because they need to destroy you. And that's the whole game. But the way that this game is played out, they make it sound like it's so reasonable and, oh, we're just trying to help you. And you've got to understand the countries like this. And if you just work with us, then this is going to be for the good of the country. Every single thing they're telling you is a lie. Everything is a lie, and they know it's a lie, but this is the bullshit game. And let's just hit into seizing land without compensation. This government has borrowed trillions of rands to cover all kinds of debts. Everything from Eskom to you name it, right? They've borrowed trillions of rands in order to finance all their junk projects. Why is it that they now need to go, and in the case of a white landowner, why must they go to the white landowner and say, excuse me, I need your land, but I'm going to pay you absolutely nothing for it. Why is that necessary? Why can't they go and borrow some more money and pay the farmer? I will tell you that their real goal, I'm almost finished.
Yes.
Their real goal is they want to take your property from you and give you nothing because they want to destroy you. That's what the real game is. but they make it sound, they don't come and say, I'm going to take this and I'm going to smash you. They don't say it like that. They come and say, oh, no, you see, if you work with us and you understand, and they're basically selling you exactly the same line, but they're selling it with bogus liberal crap. And,
exactly.
And then there are whites. Then there are whites who sit and say, oh, you see, they're so reasonable. Yeah, let's go with this. You know, or they can use the Christian angle. You know, oh, you stole it from the blacks. You know, give it back to them now. You owe them. And if you're foolish enough to give away your farm for nothing, then they walk away laughing under their sleeve. They've destroyed you and it costs them nothing, you know. So that's just, it's just a little bit of the concept of government by deception. The way the communist thinks and how he speaks is very deceptive, and it fools you. And liberals and Jews make it sound, oh, no, they're just reasonable people. Meanwhile, they're busy screwing us up to our eyeballs. So
that's exactly. And just that's an excellent point, Jan, or excellent points, because the communists also do it in a timeline that is, if not particularly paid attention to, it will be missed or it will be shrugged off as nothing and you won't see it because they drag it out. And the Western man is geared towards working at a solution immediately. But the communists, they drag it out over such a long period of time that people then eventually, they just don't resist anymore. But
yeah, absolutely. And if I may interject with another thing before I forget, like with that thing of Donald Trump and where Donald Trump spoke and then the ANC went and said that Donald Trump's got the wrong information. Here is another thing that like really riles me up. The real thing that you and I do not know is you and I do not know and never get to hear what does the ANC tell the US government when they sit quietly in a meeting room. So they go and they talk all kinds of shit that you and I know absolutely nothing about. And then the US government goes away and they say, oh, okay, these are the facts. Meanwhile, they're not the facts. But you and I don't know that we've just been – that they're just lying about our situation. That is why, for example, with farm murders, the ANC just openly says farm murders, there's no such thing. We don't recognize such a thing. There's no evidence that proves that farm murders are in any way like some kind of campaign. And this bothers me a lot because the ANC is the official spokesman for us. For us.
Exactly.
They're our government. Even though you and I never voted for them, they are our official representatives, and we do not know what they are saying to the others. And they may be going to people with all kinds of bullshit evidence, all kinds of bullshit crap, going to the Americans and the British. The British were also in on this, where they were. I think the British even gave some money. I think they gave Ramaphosa
right
some money.
Now, they gave him a substantial amount of money. And Theresa May said that the British government fully supports the expropriation without compensation bill, and the International Monetary Fund, right? They said
yes.
That they think that expropriation without compensation is the moral thing to do, and they also fully support it.
Yes. Now, what you and I don't know is what is the data that they're taking to these governments and organizations and presenting? What kind of crap are they sucking out of their thumbs and presenting?
Well,
and there's none of us there to check them, to say, excuse me, you are lying through your teeth. You know, there's none of us to sit there and counter that. And that bothers me a lot. That's another reason why we need a political party.
Yes, absolutely. Well, also the main reason, I think it's not so much my take on it is, I think it's not so much that the US government only hears one side of the story. It's the general public in the outside world only hear one side of the story. Therefore, there is no moral outrage from the world in general with regards to what happens in South Africa and farm murders, because they only get one side of the story. My take on it is that this thing is not purely, but for the Western countries like the USA and Europe and so forth, it's greatly economical, and also for the Russians. Now, why I say this is because if you look at their approach to South Africa, and their economic plan for the world. So we know that when de Klerk signed away South Africa, he famously said, it is time to usher in a new world order. Now, this new world order is something that the Bush family spoke about, he spoke about, and many people that are in those circles spoke about. And it basically pertains to dividing the world up into different economic sectors. So no longer do you have countries and nationalities, you have got one big global business. And each country represents a sector of the economy. Now, China represents the secondary sector of the economy, for it has the secondary and it has got two components of the three sectors in the economy, secondary and primary. South Africa is a third world country because it's only a primary sector country. Now, the only hindrance in that economic plan in South Africa for those guys are the agricultural sector. And the reason this is because the agricultural sector in South Africa is the only sector that is still making money in South Africa. And this is opposed to their economic plan. And then, of course, the BRICS governments, they've got their own economic plan for South Africa. These BRICS trade agreements is actually a discussion that needs to be held on its own, because it's very, very interesting how they go about spreading their influence and actually using this globalist new world order against itself.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't know that much about BRICS, but I think we must have that discussion. What I will also add here is that everybody is looking out for their interests. The only people that are supposed to be looking out for our interests is supposed to be this government. And this government, as far as I'm concerned, isn't looking out for our interests and is even hostile to us and looking at ways of destroying us, but we don't get to hear about it. You know, so I think there's a general hostility anyway.
Yes, absolutely. So in 2016, Julius Malema said, after he entered parliament and so on and so forth, he said that should the expropriation without compensation amendment not be made to the constitution, he will start an unled revolution in South Africa to ensure that the land is returned to the people. But this has got nothing, like you previously explained, it's got nothing to do with the people. It basically has just got to do with politicians having something to bargain with them. But now they can't, because the Boers are still inhabiting these farms. So they can't use it to the extent that they want to use it as a bargaining chip to say, hey, you can come and open up a mine here, then you just pay me this and that or the other. Because there's a very famous Jew in South Africa that helped, or a very non-famous Jew. Nobody actually knows about this rat. But his name is Neil Rissek. He helped Patrice Motsepe found African Rainbow Minerals. And Patrice Motsepe is, by the way, the richest, wealthiest black man in South Africa. And guess who's second to him?
Ramaphosa.
And guess who helped Ramaphosa? Neil Rissek, the exact same guy. Guess who helped Bridget Khadebe? Guess who helped Jeff Khadebe? The exact same guy. He's helping get into... He helped Ramaphosa with this... Do you know about this game trading thing that they had a while back? where they had this, they sold buffaloes for 800 million rands and stuff like that.
Yes. I know that he's got a game farm and he was selling game. That's all I know.
Yeah. All it is Neil Rissek is the driving force behind this whole thing. I sat down and he explained to us, well, he didn't explicitly, but, you know, if you have the mind for it, then you understand what he was saying. And he basically gave all of these ideas to Ramaphosa, because as he put it, Ramaphosa came to him and said, hey, Neil, I need to make money. Can you help me make money? And guess what? Neil helped him make money. Now, the opposing faction to this is Ace Magashule, and you've got Jacob Zuma. They are in the BRICS. They are in the BRICS communist part that still seeks for African liberation. They want Africa to be liberated from the white man. So the United States and the Jews don't necessarily want to drive the South Africans out of the land in South Africa. They don't want to drive us, let's say, into the sea. But the communists, they want to drive us into the sea. The black, the Jews just want to get us off our farms so that we're not an economic entity anymore. Now, this is what's very interesting, Jan, is that if you listen to John Sullivan's remarks with regards to land reform, he's continually focusing on the economic side. And if you then hold, bear in mind, right after they visited us, this initiative to visit the farmers and to inform them about Ramaphosa and how good he will be came just after Mike Pompeo and John Sullivan visited South Africa. And ever since then, AgriSA has continually been talking about they want transparency with regards to land reform and how it is going to work. Because these guys are not concerned about the moral dilemma that is posed by land reform in South Africa. They are only concerned with how does it affect the American economy. That is why the Americans have actually sent military force to South Africa. Ever since, they've been training blacks ever since, I think it was 2013. And there's been military personnel in South Africa. And they're explicitly training them for riot control. Because if anarchy were to break out in South Africa, they would then be safeguarding American interests within South Africa. That's what it's all about.
That's very interesting. That I didn't know about the training for riot control, But you are quite right that these things are not by accident. They're anticipating possible problems and they are preparing them and they are there to assist them. And the Americans are there to assist the ANC in succeeding. And all they are trying to do is they're just trying to moderate them so that they're not openly vicious communists. That's all. That is the basic CIA type of policy. But, you know, the Jew is in there also playing double games. And he doesn't really care too much whether a communist comes into power or not, as long as his business survives. And they will help anybody. Israel, for example, sold riot control vehicles and stuff to Mugabe for decades. And they were helping him a lot. Do you know that the Jews, even a Jewish company in South Africa, an Israeli company in South Africa, actually rigged the 2013 election in Zimbabwe? And it got out into the news. Even the British were publishing it. These Jews were paid I think, $8.5 million, which was like about 100 million rand to rig the Zimbabwe election. South African company, I've got the name and all that. and a Israeli South African company. These Jews will go and deal with any of these communists, whereas we whites, we hate communists, and we want to get rid of them, and we want to drive them out, and we see them as an open enemy. Not so the Jews. The Jews go straight in there. They go chummy up with their communist buddies, and they talk to them. I mean, you saw how did it strike you when the Jewess Helen Ziller of the DA was suddenly buddies with Julius Malema? I mean, where the hell did that come from? Most people didn't see that coming. They're like, what the hell? How can this be? Here are the supposed liberals of South Africa and suddenly armed around one of the biggest communist racists in the country. And you know what? Ziller also had another plan that was a flop. There was a woman called, I forget her name now, but she started a political party. She was a black woman who'd been in the World Bank. So there you can see the globalists coming in. They even tried to invent a whole image for her and everything, and it made her look like an idiot. And then Achang turned into a flop. But you can actually see that the original plan was they were going to launch this black woman with her links to the World Bank, and then they were going to merge her with the DA. And then, yes, then things started to go wrong, and then Helen Ziller, the Jewess, had to stab a hung in the back.
after she had to kiss her, that was awesome.
Yes.
She so famously kissed her. But it's very interesting, the DA, what's happening there now with Moshe Maimane. You know how the Jews create characters to shape society. And this Moshe Maimane, he's a quote unquote Christian, and he's got a white wife, and he's intellectual because he speaks seven languages. Hey, you dumb boor, how many languages do you speak? Can you speak seven languages? I guess you better just shut the fuck up, then you've got nothing to say. You know, you see, that's what they do. That's how these things work. That's how they work. It's very and all of these things are, all of our people are so easily susceptible to this kind of thinking because they're indoctrinated from a very small age in, well, going to school, to public school. So
the Jews in the case of Maimane, that is a whole other topic. We should even have a show just talking about that, because there I can tell you some of the history, because I heard about this more than 10 years ago, and I was already talking to my Jewish friend. More than 10 years ago, he told me that the Jews have got a plan with the DA to take over South African politics by 2019. He specifically gave the year as 2019, and I watched with great delight to see the whole Jewish plan flopping. It flopped, and I laughed at it. And even back then, I was testing him on questions in that regard. I was actually asking him hard questions. I said to him, "So how many blacks voted for the DA this time?" And he was ducking and diving. And I went and did my own research, and I came to the conclusion that the vast majority of voters for the DA are still whites and probably coloreds and so forth. And they've not actually managed to fool the blacks enough. And that's where Maimane came in. Suddenly they pitch up with this guy. Oh, here's a black guy with a white wife, and he's a Christian.
And a high IQ.
And you know, Helen Ziller, who's Jewish herself, she's also a Christian, you know. So they make sure, we're all Christians. And then the hope is that all the Boers and everybody goes and votes for them. Because, these are Christians, and it doesn't matter if you're black or white, you're going to go to heaven and be with Jesus, you know. So that's how they're setting it up, you know.
It's a very interesting topic, because my mother gave a lift to a guy from her one friend's house, which was a politician in the DA. And he said by the year 2021, the Western Cape is going to become another province of Europe under the leadership of the DA. But what they do... So, yes, really. But what's interesting about the whole Christian dynamic in South Africa is the Boers have always been beholden to the beliefs that they are God's chosen people and that only white people can go to heaven. And back there is this thing called the Edict van Nantes, back before the Great Trek. Yeah. This is the real reason why the Voortrekkers moved from the Cape, is because they, the church of the day, said that they wanted to promote non-racialism in the church. And then a bunch of the Boers said, listen, this is nonsense. We don't agree with this. And that sparked a lot of outrage. And this actually led to the Boers gathering and moving so that they could, as they said, start a house for God of their own, which will be racially pure. Okay?
Oh, wow. The original racists. The original racists.
Very, very much so. That's why our history has been reshaped to the point that they have totally invaded our Christian identity, to the point where they said, okay, so these Boers are ethnically centered. You can't be a Boer unless you are white and of European descendants. It's not possible. So what can we do now? How do we approach this problem? Let's tell them, if they are all of a sudden Christian, then if you are Christian, then even though Sipho isn't white, he's a brother in Christ. So all of a sudden now we can be on the same team, barring this barrier of the racial divide that we have. So in all senses, the church is the biggest antagonizer against the Boers in South Africa. The church is the biggest, the church as a governing body is the biggest threat to the Boers in South Africa. And that's the one thing that the Boers still need to be awakened to. And when we awaken to that, then, you know, then the sky's the limit. Because we need to return to saying that no black can enter heaven, to that form of our religion, that it's only ethnically centric and only white people can participate in it. Nobody else. Nobody else. Like there were some of them that believed that we were sent here to cleanse. You know this Harry Knutze guy. So... they believe that we needed to cleanse South Africa from the blacks.
So, oh, really? does he believe that we have to ethnically genocide all the non-whites and do our work, and that is the work for God that we must do?
That is the will of God, yeah. That is the will of God.
Oh, wow. Hey, I could work with that. That
exactly. You see, so the churches in South Africa, the Drie Sisters Kerke, all fund something. I always ask to my brothers, how many money have they given to the drought relief of farmers in South Africa? And it's a big resounding zero. And then you ask them, but how much do they donate to this organization called Geopende Deure, which is opened doors, which pertains to open borders. What do? They help the poor Syrians to come into Europe so that they can also become Christians. You know, it's ludicrous. Wow. It's absolutely ludicrous. And the Christians are paying for it in South Africa, not because the Christians are bad, but because they have been subverted. You know, they have been mind fucked. There's no other way to say it. And I get very, very angry. And I have been threatened many times by my own people to be, you know,
beaten,
get in the fight. Yeah, blixem. Because I speak out against the church every chance that I get. Because this is what the Jews always look at you and they say, where is the Achilles heel? What is special to this people? Let's take it. Because the thing about a Jew is, he's just like a black. He can't create anything authentic. There is nothing that he can do that creates a life form or a movement or anything in life. But he can corrupt and he can subvert something. So let's look at, for instance, the Naspers. Do you know where Naspers comes from? The big press organization, the media house in South Africa.
If my understanding is that Naspers originally should have been part of the stuff created by the Broederbond, which created the apartheid. That's where I would guess.
Yes.
That's what I would guess.
By General Herzog. So
okay.
He started Naspers, which stands for National Press. Nationale Press, which was an initiative to keep the Boers informed after the Boer War. Right?
Yes.
And then in the 60s, they got their first Jewish board member or something like this. And from there, it's been shaped to, it's now one of the leading media houses in the world, this Naspers.
And isn't it the one that publishes Die Bild and all those disgusting super liberal Afrikaans things?
Yes.
Horrible stuff. I hate Die Bild. And one of my friends said to me that he will never buy Die Bild again as long as he lives. And I agree. These things are garbage, absolute garbage. And now Naspers is in China and everywhere. But I hear it's been a bad year for them.
They bought shares in Al Jazeera. Like you say, they bought shares in China. That's going off on a tangent here.
That's another topic, yeah.
But the thing is, yeah.
The other thing is, if we can return to Agri-SA and these... These tricks to destroy the farmers, because that is of interest to me. Because you were talking about them trying to bullshit the farmers into giving away their land, rich people coming, scientists coming. Can we talk about that? Because that to me is a critical thing.
Absolutely. I want to dive into that head first, if you will. So this... I'm going to put this link in the chat, guys. I'm going to send you the video as well, Jan. It's where AfriForum, AgriSA are discussing their stance on land reform. There you go. Okay, so I don't want to play this video on stream because it's, you know, tedious to sit through and maybe I will lose my temper again and start cursing here. But... basically, this video is titled Constitution Doesn't Need to Be Changed for Land Reform. This is a quote by AfriForum. In this video, this woman that is representing AgriSA as the spokesperson says, AgriSA has never been, listen now, opposed to land reform. They have never been opposed to land reform. So if you are not opposed to something, what does that imply?
That you are for it.
That you support it. So they support the blacks taking away the farmers' farms under the pretext that, yes, it is true, the farmers stole the land, which is utter nonsense. We didn't steal any land. This country was founded by us for us. This country wasn't founded by us for the blacks. This was founded by us. But the British, after the Second World War, brought in the blacks to undermine the Boers so as to smother them so that they can't get a foothold in the economy again. That's how that went down. But AfriForum, AgriSA, make no mistake, they... 100% support expropriation. They just don't want it to be without compensation because that would be detrimental to the economy. Now, here's the thing. This is how it's going to go down. ACRI-SR and Donald Trump's panel are working on a way to implement land reform in South Africa without starting a revolution. The Jews don't want a revolution in South Africa. The communists do. Okay? So what they want to do is they are working on an economic plan with Ramaphosa. And this thing just happened right after Pompeo and John Sullivan visited South Africa. Then they started going to the farmers and saying, hey, listen, if you're not going to participate in the debate, then you're going to lose your farm because the government's simply going to take your farm. Okay? Then the very next thing they say is that if you don't participate in land reform, then it won't be the government that takes away your farm, but it would rather be your neighbor that is a better and a smarter farmer than you. So first, they tell you that the government's going to take your farm if you don't participate. Then they say it's not the government that's going to take your farm, but rather the guy that is sold out to the government that's going to take your farm. You see how
some psychological warfare there. Psychological warfare, definitely.
Then they've got this in this video. Maybe we should watch it. Would you mind? It's 7 minutes. Do you think we should watch the video? Oh, no, man. Okay, no, we're not going to watch the video. Sorry, guys, because I forgot. I need to use a completely different browser if I want to share the audio. Sorry, that was retarded of me. But you can watch it in your own time. I'll send you the link again. Okay. Basically, what they say in this video is that they are not opposed to land reform whatsoever. They're just opposed to expropriation without compensation. And they've got the backing of certain farmers. Now, if we return to the other article I was discussing, there is this mega farmer called Nick Serfontein. And on the farmers, on the conference that they held, which the United States attended, and the farmer and the quote unquote farmers attended, it was a very small one that was held in a place called Bela Bela or Warmbad in South Africa. And they basically only invited a select few farmers, some of which I know personally, to this conference. And all of these guys are what you would consider mega farmers, right? And this was not open to the general public. Nobody ever gave Rolf Meyer a mandate to speak on behalf of the whites or of the farmers. And what they're doing is they're saying, listen, what you want to do is you want to support economic reform in the agricultural sector by bringing in black economic empowerment in the agricultural sector. So this is their plan. They take very, very wealthy farmers and they give them black partners. And then the government says that they're going to give them contracts. They're going to force people that don't want to participate in BEE in the agricultural sector out of the economy by not allowing them to market their products, not giving them access to the harbors of South Africa, imposing taxes on them. So this is nothing other than economic sabotage on the white farmers of South Africa. And I said this when Agri-SA came to our region. I said this 10 months ahead of time. I said to their vice president, listen, man, we know what you're going to do. You want to bring in black economic empowerment into the agricultural sector. And he was beating around the bush, trying to dodge it. And eventually He admitted it. So here's the thing. TLE said back in 2016, if the ANC or Malema or anybody comes for our farms, we will declare war against the ANC government. The TLE organization, Transvaal Agricultural Union, will representing the Boers, declare war against the ANC government. You see?
Wow, now, nice. I like TLU.
Yes. Now, this is a problem for the guys at AgriSA because they don't want the war. They want peaceful, democratic governance. That's what they want. This is what they want. And they want to force us out of the economy by forcing black economic empowerment on us. And they go not to any, they go to the bigger farmers. And they said in the article that they have the support of the bigger farmers. The only real challenge for them is how to get the small farmers on board. Because here's the thing, they have got this program on CakeNet in South Africa on TV. That is called Mega Farmers, which they elevate the status and the personas of the mega farmers as these godlike beings, right? And they spread, and it's Piet Krookkamp.
Wow.
It's Piet Krookkamp, which is a very well-known liberal scholar and anti-white professor in South Africa, right? I'm sure you know of him. So this guy goes around and spreads. In 2013, he already began a campaign that said South Africa doesn't have enough water to sustain agriculture on it.
Okay. Thank you, Poseidon.
Yeah, and now he's hosting this thing called Mega Farmers, and he's saying how the mega farmers of South Africa are completely capable of supplying the general public with food and so forth and so on. This is an absolute lie, because the mega farmers of South Africa make out less than 10% of the total farming population in South Africa. Far less than 10%, maybe even less than 5%. Because there are like 36,000 farmers in South Africa, approximately. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that we are a political force. The farmers of South Africa are a political force. That's why they need to get us out of the way, just like they did in the USA. Or just think about it. You guys that know a farmer, ask them how many family businesses have been destroyed by mega farming corporations. Already in the Northern Transvaal, you get companies that are farmers. I asked my friend the other day, so is your father a farmer? He said no, but he works for a farming company. What is that?
Oh, wow.
What is a farming company? It's something that is owned by mega corporations so that they can control our fruit production. And yet again, not only to control the food production, but to drive the farmers from the rural areas in South Africa. Now, in many places, this may not be true, but in South Africa specifically, your rural area is the bastion of power of the white man. It's the bastion of his identity, of his heritage, of his character, of everything. This is what keeps, this is the only thing that still keeps the white man afloat in South Africa, is the agricultural sector, and that's why there is a relentless attack on it.
If I may add a few things, just to give a bit of perspective. You say there are 36,000 farmers now. I recall that at the time that the blacks took over this country, that there were 60,000 white farmers here then. So, and yes. I know that in the intervening years, that many have gone bankrupt due to all the changes in the country, etc. So the mega farmers, I don't think there were many, if any, mega farmers at the time that they took over the country. But I do know that mega farmers is like a much newer thing that's come. And I've suspected that as other farmers have either been murdered or they've been driven off their land or they've gone bankrupt, that the other farmers have been buying up farms of those who were destroyed. And that is how they became bigger farmers. Am I right?
Well, that's a very interesting. So the mega farmers is an old phenomenon that comes from the time that the British annexed South Africa. So what happened is they had the scorched earth policy and they basically burned down all the farms, right? And drove many farmers into bankruptcy, etc. Now, those that supported the British in the war effort, i.e. the joiners, as we called them, or the Hanskakies, right? They were rewarded by the British government giving them many, many huge farms. They gave these guys huge farms, and they even gave them livestock, and they gave them fencing free of charge. Free of charge. And many of these mega farmers, guess what? They are the heirs yeah. of those people.
Okay.
Of those treacherous. That's why we absolutely hate these mega farmers in many cases. Oh, and one of the very famous mega farmers that they very much love on this show, he's a guy from the Netherlands. And guess what? This guy has got a black wife. So he perfectly illustrates to you the possibilities of what can be done if you just overcome your racial prejudices.
Wow. You see, that's the kind of stuff that hits the mass media. As long as it conforms to the Jewish notion of multiracial, race mixing, etc., then you can go big time. But if you are pro-white or only white, you're not going to be on that TV channel at all. End of story for you.
And yes, what they do to you, if you're a pro-white advocate in South Africa, they will bring you on to the show, for instance, if they bring you on, and as soon as you come on, they will just yell at you, never allow you to speak, and as soon as you try to speak, they'll say something like, "Oh, I can't do this anymore. I can't take this intolerance. Let's shut it down."
like they did
to the RVB. They did this to the RVB. When Eugene Terblanche died, they had the Secretary General of the RVB on a few news stations, and they did this exact same thing to him.
Yeah, the mass media only toes the liberal line. It's got to be liberal or pro-black, race mixing. Otherwise, it doesn't feature. You're gone. Or they'll just attack you outright if they even deal with you. They'll just attack you.
Exactly.
So you say that these guys. Another thing that you said that was interesting to me. Did you say that they came with scientists and things and had conferences and told the farmers that South Africa cannot support farming and all that kind of stuff, weather change or whatever? Can you just give more of that?
Okay, so Anglo-American had this farm outreach to the farming community, and they invited us, and it's basically an voorlichting, so it's like information day where they teach farmers how to farm. Anglo-American taught us, is going to give us a conference on how to farm in the future. Arriving at this conference, Anglo-American greets us like this: "Welcome, fellow farmers. Today, we would not like to welcome you as Anglo-American, but rather as fellow agricultural pioneers, since we now own more farmland than what we own mining land in South Africa. And actually, if you think about it, we are not a mining company, we're an agricultural company."
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
One of their speakers on this thing was one of these climate kooks that was telling us about renewable energy in South Africa and the impact that it has on nature, right? But also how in 2050 South Africa will not be able to be farm anymore due to the drought. And all of the farmers that visited this talk said, oh shit, we're fucked. There's no hope. You know, it's a scare tactic. There has been many droughts in South Africa. In 1970, there was also a severe drought. But guess what? The government gave you 80% subsidy to buy food for your animals. And they also gave you cash to buy groceries with. Wow. In today's time, fast forward that to today's time, the ANC let 200 million rand go missing for drought relief. It went missing, Jan. I don't know if maybe you've if you've seen it.
Well,
if you've seen this, honey.
Well, you know something. I wouldn't be surprised that there are all kinds of covert tricks. And the thing that you'll always find is, oops, sorry. Oh, it screws the white man. Oh, goodness, we don't know how that happened. But we know how it happened. That's interesting.
Yes, no, exactly. And you know what?
Sorry, my apologies for interrupting. This brings me back to the concept of government by deception, that these people do not show their open hatred for you, that because they got to control the thing in case it gets out of control. So they got to stab you in the back quietly and in ways that you aren't expecting. And
exactly.
That's why I trust nothing that this government says. Nothing, not a word that they say.
But here's one, here's another thing. Do you know about the foot and mouth disease that broke out in South Africa last week?
No.
Okay, so foot and mouth disease broke out in 4 provinces in South Africa. Limpopo, Mpumalanga, or it's Northern Transvaal, the Laagveld, I think it was Vrystaat, and I don't know the other one. Northwest. So in these 4 provinces, foot and mouth disease broke out. And basically, there has been a quarantine. No animals coming in and no animals going out of these areas. Now, you tell me, Jan, knowing where Botswana is situated, why is it that the border to Botswana is not closed and that all the cattle from Botswana are still being brought in to the South African market in Transvaal and they're selling the Botswana cattle in South Africa?
Oh, wow.
Doesn't it more and more seem to show to you that this is not all happenstance? This is like a collective effort?
Yes. You know, I definitely agree with you. You know, it could be that they are trying to wage a war without actually firing bullets. That I have no problem with that concept. That they're trying to screw the white man and they're just trying to do it through the back door, you know. Just nail you here, nail you there, and they're trying to break people. And when they demoralized those farmers, these Anglo-American scumbags, and Anglo-American, I mean, that's Jewish, that is Oppenheimer family. And you know who's also linked to Anglo-American? There's a Jew called Clem Sunter. Clem Sunter is the top Jewish strategist for Anglo-American. And Clem Sunter he was famous for writing his prediction, his book called The High, he spoke about the future of South Africa, and this is before it became black. He said, well, you see, there's the high road and the low road, and maybe the country will take the high road to prosperity, or it might just take the low road and, you know, go down the drain. And he was sort of dancing around on that theme. But I'll tell you something that my Jewish friend told me about Clem Sunter is the Jews, a very important point, I think, Jack, is that the Jews did not expect the Boers and the whites in general to survive as long as they have. and it kind of screwed them at many levels. I'll tell you something that my Jewish friend told me probably about 7-8 years ago before I cut off all ties with him. He said to me the one day, he said, "Oh, Clem Santa of Anglo-American, he was talking about the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And the JSE, he said that the most numerous new companies that are being floated on the JSE are Afrikaans. Afrikaans companies are coming onto the JSE and they're succeeding and they're growing. And it's completely astounding them." The Jews never saw this coming. They never anticipated that the whites, especially the Afrikaners, could be successful even when all the rules are rigged against them and they're being knifed in the back continuously. So Clem Santa was totally stunned that the fastest growing portion of the JSE was actually Afrikaans companies, and it like hit them in the face. And I think that is also, you know, ties back maybe even to them buying up farms and things. These people, these Jews, they thought that the whites would just crumble. The whites, especially the Boers, would just crumble. And they're stunned that you know, 20, 25 years onwards, the whites are still there. And good God, they haven't died out and they're still managing to survive.
Against all odds.
You know, the sort of saying to, if I may just override you, but they're sort of saying to each other, "Hey, you know, we really fucked them so good, and look at it, we still didn't fucking wipe them out. You know, what the fuck did we do wrong?"
it's defiant of the odds, and that's a very big characteristics of the Boer people, and. It's interesting because you see Ramaphosa, right, is very nervous about this because he knows that he can't implement expropriation without compensation. That's why he needs the help of Donald Trump and his advisors to give him advice into how to take the farms from the country, from the farmers legally, because there's this time bomb. And it's called the black populace of South Africa. And they've been promised something and they need to collect at some point. Now, you've got people in the communist segment of the political sphere that are pushing for violent reform, right? They want it and they want it now. So Ramaphosa is on a timeline and he knows that he can't take the farms from the farmers, because first of all, let's say the legislation passes and they amend the constitution, all of that good stuff, right? Then they will have to implement this. So that would ipso facto render me as a farmer an illegal owner of land. Therefore, I am breaking the law by owning land. You see, I am now prosecutable by the law. So he will have to send either the police or the military. Now, the police is in shambles. Imagine for yourself a scenario, Jan, where the police arrives at my door saying, "Hey, Jack, get off your farm. You're an illegal on this farm." Can you just for a sec, take a second and imagine how that scene's going to go down. Do you think I'm getting in the van?
you would probably be there with your gun and say, "Get the fuck off my land."
Let me tell you what, they're not getting back into their van in a situation like that. And that doesn't go for me. That goes for all farmers. If you as a police officer roll onto a farmer's land in South Africa telling him that he needs to get off, you better have kissed your wife goodbye leaving the house, is what I'm telling you. And he knows that the police force can't implement this. And he also knows that the military can't implement this. So he needs to use another form. But the axe that's looming around his head is Andile Nkatama, the radical, the one that's saying, we will kill their children, their daughters, their wife, their animals. You know, he's going off like that, shouting that they'll kill everything.
This is Black Land First.
This is Black Land First. Yes.
Yeah.
And many, many Boers always want to know, who will be the next leader of the Boers? Let me tell you what. The next leader of the Boers is not going to be a white man. He's going to be a black man. And his name's Andile Mkatama.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I hope that we can, I would say that when I look at this so-called land reform and seizure of land without compensation, I regard this thing with such seriousness because it's more than just farmland. 70% of land claims are on private property, even houses inside cities. They can actually seize anything. People who've looked into the legislation told me that they can actually seize anything. They can come and take your vehicle, your car, your house, your, if you've got intellectual property, they can seize that too. That apparently yes. The law is very, very wide. It's very dangerous. And another thing, I'm sure you know this, but I only discovered this a few years ago, is do you know that the ANC basically passed a law seizing all the minerals in South Africa long time ago, and that if you dig more than 6 feet into the ground, that you're actually on government property already?
This was also something that was signed in by the British government. And if you actually steal, if you smuggle diamonds, do you know what you're charged with? You're charged with theft from the Queen. So you're stealing from Britain.
Is that so? Wow.
Yeah, no, that is really so. My father is in a court cases with the government with big mining corporations at this point, because they say we are on their farm. Yeah, or they've got the mineral rights to our farm. So we are illegally trespassing. It's all big fuck up, to put it that way.
But don't be careful when you use that kind of term, because it might not be a fuck up. It might be intentional. just returning to how they write these laws, because people have said the same thing to me about the law against free speech. Attorneys said to me that, oh, it's a big stuff up. But is it really a stuff up, or is that just the intention? You know, they are writing it so that they can get anything they want. They're basically trying to legalize theft. That's basically what they're trying to do in that case, you know. And in the case of free speech, they're trying to legalize censorship to shut you down and put you in jail for nothing. So, there was something else I wanted to mention. When Ramaphosa was lying through his teeth, and I want to return to your Rolf, is it Rolf Buerta, the economist?
Yes.
I read something quite a while ago. In fact, just give me a second, see if I can find it on the internet. If I can still find this. This Ramaphosa, he can lie through his teeth. There you go. Oh,
he's very good at lying.
this guy's a liar through and through. And I still want to put out all the stuff about the Jews and their links to him. He's personal friends with the chief rabbi of South Africa. Personal friends.
Yes. Did you know that was one of the very first things that he did, was visit the Jewish church or what synagogue in South Africa to be blessed after he was inaugurated?
Yes, absolutely. that guy, I will still put out my stuff about why I believe that Ramaphosa, as a black, converted to Judaism. He converted to Judaism. I'm willing to bet on that. But I just want to read. Let me just quickly look through here.
Of course. You know what Judaism is? You know what the English for Judaism is?
No.
Capitalism.
Okay. Okay. Here I want to read to you. This is from Eyewitness News. Eyewitness News is article. It's dated. This was in June, I think. It was the 21st of June, 2019. And it says, Ramaphosa's plan to create 2 million jobs for unemployed youth. And I'm not sure if this is the one where he talks about the land. But more than half of young people in the country are unemployed. I'm not going to waste time here, but I've seen him say in the past, he even said that seizing the land from the farmers would create 2 million jobs. He said that. He said that quite a time back, that if they do land reform, that there'll be more jobs. But what I'm not sure of, and this is where my discussions with you, where I'm interested in your viewpoint, is whether they're going to, when they seize those farms, are they seizing the farms to hand it over to the Jewish mining companies and black mining companies? You know, is that the real game here? Are they even going to be farming, you know, or are they actual mineral? Yes. It's about mining.
Stealing. It's about minerals. And like I told you, Neil Resick is the Jew that helped Ramaphosa found Ramaphosa, and he helped Patrice Motsepe start the African Rainbow Minerals thing. Also, Thabo Mbeki is in that clan. All of those guys, you know. So it's all about mining. It's all about how it works in South Africa is, some Jew says he wants to mine, or whoever says he wants to mine. Then he goes to a corrupt politician. The politician then says, well, listen, my cousin, he wants a business opportunity. Then, you know, his cousin gets in the business opportunity, and all of a sudden the Jews have the right to mine in South Africa. It's what it's all about. It's about minerals. It's about exploiting the South African minerals. It's what it's about. Like this is their plan for South Africa. They don't want agriculture in South Africa. They want mining industry. They want to turn South Africa into one big mine.
Mine. Okay. And then, of course, they don't care. Huh? That they'll just import the food from China and America or wherever.
Yes, exactly. Now, there's a conflict that's about, I think there's a conflict brewing, because already the Chinese brought a lot of military units to Botswana, and the Russians also arriving in Cape Town. So they're preparing for something, because the Russians, how their BRICS trading agreement works is, let's say they want to build, the Russians build nuclear reactors, right? The Indians, they want to take the automobile industry. The Chinese, they want the mining industry, right? So then the Russian says to the Chinese, listen, you guys can take the mines in South Africa. And as a trade-off to this, all of the trees that you're cutting down in Africa, we want that. You know, it's a trading, it's a bartering kind of agreement that they've got. So they don't necessarily want something from the same pie. It's, I'll give you something in South Africa, but then you give me something from Mozambique. That's how that whole agreement works. And now there's going to be conflicting interests. And the Zuma faction and the Ramaphosa faction are actually engaged in a war. Politicians are being killed daily like not the higher up politicians, but politicians on a municipal level are being shot dead like flies in Durban specifically, and in the northwest, that conflict also manifests itself.
Excellent. So there's a miniature civil war going on, a power struggle between the two factions of the ANC, the Zuma versus the Ramaphosa camp, the Jew camp versus the Indian camp.
Exactly. So that's why they go so relentlessly after these Guptas, right? Now, what is interesting is with the pressure that ESCOM is under, during this load shedding, there was 7 power stations that were petrol bombed, that were thrown with petrol bombs. And guess who did that? That was the Zuma faction sabotaging the Ramaphosa faction, because they want to create... Sorry?
No, that's fine. They finished.
They want to create instability in the country.
you know what these blacks do? I saw this in Mafeking. These black politicians. It's actually quite funny. But you know, as it is, they are dysfunctional. And then what you get is you get their opposing faction come and try to make them appear even more dysfunctional than they are. That's what they did in Mafeking. They tore up Mafeking and they fucked it up. And I'm going to still put out the photos from that. And that was just straight. It was straight a faction fight between two ANC groups. And they fucked up Mafeking, man. They tore the place down. I was there. Buildings, government buildings, they were shattered, man. I went to a petrol station. They blew up the ATM and they totally flattened and tore apart the shop that's linked to the petrol station. Unreal. But it's fascinating, and I enjoy it. I say go for it. Let them rock, hey? Let them have their faction fights. It's good. You know, it stirs up new hatreds among them. It creates new problems for them. It's good.
I absolutely support a global conflict in the first place. And I support and civil war, all-out faction war in South Africa. And the reason I say this is, to my estimation, it's the only scenario where nationalists, like the true form of nationalism, you know, national socialism, will get a chance to rise again. Because in that calamity, if we somehow manage to, you know, play the angles right, then we can rise to power again. Like in South Africa. Sorry?
No, okay, carry on. You finish.
In South Africa, it would be majorly beneficial for us if the blacks started fighting each other. But you see a lot of things happening in South Africa, and to the untrained eye, it just looks like chaos. But if you study it a bit, then you start to realize it's this faction attacking that faction, and these guys are representing these guys. Because the blacks wanted to burn Kulini down. This wasn't about municipality. This was because of, you know, my racism and shit. So there are many different factions in South Africa, but the Boers are just, they don't have any allies in this fight in the first place. And in the second place, they don't realize themselves that they are a faction. They think that they've got nothing to work with.
Absolutely. And you know something, I am absolutely convinced from my own life and my own experiences in Rhodesia and in the past in South Africa, and just watching the whites even after black rule, I am completely convinced that if things go to hell in a handbasket, that whites are going to be at their best. That you're going to see whites move and shake faster than anybody else. And if anybody is going to make plans to survive, it's going to be whites. I do not doubt our ability to survive chaos. I do not doubt that. I say bring the chaos on. Let the chaos come. I've said it many times to people. I've said to them, the best friend for all whites everywhere. This includes America, Canada, Europe, everywhere. The best friend of the white man is chaos, because in that chaos, that is going to open doors. It's going to open new doors where you're going to see the white man at his finest. He's at his finest when he's under pressure, and you'll see what the end results of this is. And if you look at black conflicts in Africa, I've studied quite a few of these things and spoken to blacks and talked to whites and looked at these things. I want to tell you that these blacks in Africa are melting down, and they are creating new tensions among themselves that didn't even exist. Even this silly xenophobia that occurred recently, that xenophobia, and by the way, that xenophobia, I was looking at it afterwards, after all the xenophobia, and it carried on for how long, how many days and weeks did it carry on? And it was endless amounts of violence and burning and stuff. And at the end of it, only five blacks got killed, which, you know, if you're going to go and do genocide and you do it at tremendous cost for 2 or 3 weeks and you only kill five people, you're not very effective. And secondly, as a direct result of them causing shit for the Nigerians and stuff here, the Nigerians in Nigeria went and burnt down at least one shop in Nigeria in retaliation. And I was just like fucking laughing at this. Like the Nigerians and the South African blacks have never had a squabble, but now suddenly there's instant hatred between them, and they themselves caused it. Whites had nothing to do with any of this. And if you actually look at a lot of stuff that's happened in Africa since black rule, I want to tell you, my friend, the whites could have more friends among blacks in all parts of Africa that you are not ready, that you do not even possibly realize. I know of blacks in Africa who, like the Zimbabweans, for example, they made enemies among other blacks in Africa. The Rwandans absolutely hate the Zimbabweans. They fucking hate them, man. And there are lots of instances where these blacks and the South African government and the ANC in doing peacekeeping, in getting involved in other conflicts and resolving it, they actually annoyed so many other blacks that there are blacks out there who fucking hate them. And I've got, I don't want to go into too much detail, but I want to tell you that sitting here in South Africa, there are blacks that you do not even realize could become our friends in the event of a conflict. I've talked to many blacks. I've sussed out this situation a lot. And I say, bring it on, man. Bring it on. Let this country go into chaos. Chaos will be the best friend the white man ever had. Not just in South Africa. Absolutely. It's going to be the same everywhere. And this is also why the whites in America don't worry about the future. The future becomes chaotic. But in that chaos, there's all kinds of weirdness. That is why the whites of South Africa, despite every attempt, I'll finish shortly, despite every attempt to fuck us over, the whites are still around and are still a power to be reckoned with.
Absolutely. That's an excellent point, because the thing is, a lot of people get caught up in what's happening and discouraged by it. But I thought a great deal about it the last few days. All the calamity within the white nationalist movements, all of this, it's just the birthing pains of a new era for white people and white leadership. And it won't start unless a great calamity hits the globe. Like the great calamity is preliminary to white awakening worldwide, and we will not lose, like you just said, because the thing that people need to understand is that democracy and capitalism are the two vices by which the Jews control the entire world that they control. They control it by democracy and by capitalism. Now, as soon as anarchy ensues in a country, then democracy goes out the door and capitalism goes out the door, because all of a sudden there's not going to be the conventional trading. And then they're going to have to move in with the American government to defend their assets in South Africa, which would in turn create a scenario where China and Russia need to also come to South Africa to safeguard their interests. And therein lies our greatest ally. Calamity is our best friend.
Bingo, bingo. Everybody, all that everybody wants is they just want to steal the resources, the mineral wealth of South Africa. They just want to steal it at the cheapest price. They just want a bunch of cheap workers, steal the resources. They don't give a shit about anything else in this country. And the moment that those resources are threatened, everyone's going to be here, man, with guns. And let the game play itself out. And we ourselves, I still think that we have got lots of potential allies, because there are so many other enemies floating around. The notion that the blacks of Africa are one united force, that's total hogwash. They tried it. It was never a big success. They tried a concept called Pan-Africanism, which was all the blacks of Africa are going to be one. There's going to be an African Union. They can't even get that thing off the ground. And even when they talk, they're totally dysfunctional. They can't even help each other. I mean, you know, to give you an idea, let me sketch this scenario for you. If South Africa and Nigeria had to go to war, it wouldn't be naval, it wouldn't be submarines and planes bombing each other. It would be a case of the Nigerians burn down everything that's South African in Nigeria, and the South Africans burn down everything that's Nigerian in South Africa, and that's how the war will be fought. Because they're too fucking dysfunctional. They couldn't get an army to the other country to go and fuck them up.
This is the most true statement. This is the truest statement I've heard in a long time. Holy shit!
That's how it's gonna work. When the black taxi drivers from South Africa get into Zimbabwe, they'll kill them in Zimbabwe, and then in South Africa they'll kill the Zimbabwean taxi drivers. That's how war is gonna be fought.
That's exactly as you say, because there is no way that they can coordinate. Like, listen to the sentence. Ramaphosa goes to the Jew and says, listen, I need a plan. How do I make money? They can't make plans. It's just like you say, when they see in their own country, oh, we are at war with the South Africans, burn down their shack. You know, that's exactly the thought patterns that resides in them.
and I'm going to be pushing my 50 years of race war in Southern Africa, because I'm going to put that on my little shop. It's the most important thing I've done since Government by Deception. And in there, you know, I spent a lot of time looking at the war. The greatest war that the South African army fought was in Angola. And it became fascinating to me why the Russians and the Cubans had to rush to Angola. And I concluded that the Russians and Cubans rushed to Angola with military forces because the black communists there, the MPLA, perceived that they were going to collapse, and the white South African army was going to take Angola. And that's why the Cubans and the Russians came. And And in the fighting, when it got to the heaviest, heaviest fighting that's ever been seen in Southern Africa with tanks and things in the Angolan bush, the Russians, despite the Russians being for the blacks and all that, the commander of the army was a Russian general, Shaganovich. He was the commander. All the senior officers, the blacks were there, but they had to bring in East Germans, they had to bring in Cubans, they had to bring in everybody else in order to create this army. Because even if they gave the blacks all the sophisticated weapons, the blacks would have just been walked over by the South African army. They needed to bring in whites, even from Europe, from the Warsaw Pact, to come and fly the planes and do combat and do the tanks and all that kind of stuff. The blacks, in any war that we fight with the blacks, if it had to be just us versus the blacks, we'd walk over them in 2 seconds flat. They will need the Russians and the Chinese to send military officers, generals, all kinds of experts, technical experts to come and assist them. Otherwise, they won't even be able to run their own army. That's how it will be.
Jan, do you know, that's exactly right. Do you know that Fidel Castro, the head general that led the forces of Cuba in South Africa, upon his arrival in Cuba, he was executed. Did you know that?
No.
He was executed because they didn't win one single battlefield in the border war, right? And okay. they told the outside world that the apartheid government caved and that that the ANC basically through conquest won, right? This is a very big part of their propaganda. And then when this guy went home, he was executed, and a lot of the generals were executed to cover up this thing that they lost. Like, it's the most humiliating. It was like the one battle, it was 3,500 casualties on the Cuban and the black side, and like 3 casualties on the SADF side. It was absolutely more people died due to drunk driving and accidents like that than actually died on the battlefield of the SADF.
Oh man, that sounds dead right, because I did quite a lot of digging into tank battles and everything, and the South Africans were cleaning their clocks, man. The battles that they say weren't won, man, South Africa ripped their army apart. All the data is there, everything is there, and this is also why it is such a disaster the way that the country was handed over. This is why in my 50 years of race war in Southern Africa, I concluded that the common thread in all the collapses of the whites in Southern Africa, the Portuguese, the Rhodesians, Southwest Africa, and South Africa itself, every single one of those collapses came about through politics, only politics. Whites were not losing the war. Whites were not being killed in large numbers. The blacks were struggling to kill fucking kill the whites. The whites had such total control. In fact, the uselessness of the ANC is so apparent in that study. And I still want to even talk even more about it. You know, there are many things that the ANC pulled off, big acts of terrorism that the ANC pulled off in South Africa that they could not have pulled off if they did not bring a white person from Europe or Britain, Russia, if they didn't bring a white to come and do certain things, those blacks would never have been able to pull these things off. The apartheid government had such, the white government of South Africa had such a fantastic hold of the black population. The blacks could not move. That is why all that stuff about passbooks and all that stuff, those things were so effective at controlling the blacks that is why the Jews and everyone was trying to get rid of that stuff. Because if they couldn't get rid of those things, the whites would have ruled these blacks for the next 100 years, man. Whites had these blacks totally tied in knots. Totally.
Exactly. Jan, I quickly need to go for a minute. Well, can you tell people about your about your 50 years of race war a bit to all the people listening? Give them a bit of where you will be releasing it and stuff like that. Is that okay?
Okay, and then we'll wind up when you get back.
Yes, then we'll. Okay. Yes, exactly. Okay.
We've had a good long chat. It's been excellent.
Yes.
Well, okay, I want to just mention 50 years of race war in Southern Africa. It was something that I started working on early this year, and initially I did it to actually get this message to whites inside South Africa, because I became aware that whites inside South Africa have completely forgotten how very successful the whites were in our struggles that we were waging against these blacks, who were being helped by absolutely everybody, the Russians, the Chinese, the World Council of Churches, you know, the whole Western world assisting them. They were getting food from Europe. They were getting assistance in every conceivable way. Every newspaper, every government was siding with them and trying to help them. And here were these 5 million whites of South Africa with this large population of blacks and the entire world against them. And these whites were actually managing to not only hold on to power, but were actually increasing their power. And in 50 years of race war in Southern Africa, I started looking at things that all whites have forgotten. We've forgotten about how the Portuguese fought the blacks. The Portuguese fought the blacks a lot. The Portuguese were on the front line of fighting the blacks. And the Portuguese actually did well. And there were things that the Portuguese did and problems that the Portuguese faced that nobody else has faced. I brought out stuff about Rhodesia that people had completely forgotten. And in 50 years of race war in Southern Africa, I also looked at the big political scene of the whites of Southern Africa, because I look on all of the whites of Southern Africa, most of us have ended up in South Africa itself. And I looked at all of us and I said, you know, in our struggles and our wars, because we all fought wars that ran for decades, in our struggles and our wars, what did we learn and what lessons can we learn from this as we are sitting here in South Africa, you know, watching the blacks trying to screw us up yet again? And 50 years of race war in Southern Africa is a high level look at all of these wars, as well as things that happened before and after, and showing the consequences of all sorts of things that happened, even down to what happened in Zimbabwe when there was black rule, how many whites were actually there, how much power did they have, how much influence did they have, and all the disasters that happened for the blacks. And there are enormous disasters that happened for the blacks. In Southern Africa's history, the whites may have had some casualties and some losses, but if you look at the actual statistics and you look at how many people got killed directly and indirectly as a result of the wars, you'll be shocked at the outcome. There are millions of blacks, at least in Mozambique alone, 1 million blacks died from starvation due to wars which whites had actually started. And 50 years of race war in Southern Africa is a big look at our history, a history that we've not looked at and studied properly, and looking at it from every conceivable angle. And I gave this talk in South Africa at a couple of places, and then when I was invited to the USA, I gave it in the USA at a few places, and I gave it across Canada. And I now want to turn it into a proper DVD, which I want to sell on my little shop related to History Reviewed and African Crisis. I want to show people actually what happened in those wars. What did the whites do? Because don't imagine that our tiny little tribe of whites in Africa, don't imagine that everybody was just kicking us around and getting off and getting away with it easily. We were punching way above our weight level. right up to the point where South Africa was the only country in the entire Western world to fight Russians face to face. And I think that is a huge feather in the cap of South Africa. South Africa was so freaking advanced, you will be shocked by the achievements of white South Africa. Absolutely shocked to the core if you see what the whites of South Africa pulled off. But all the whites of Southern Africa, we learned from each other. Everybody contributed something to the other, and we helped each other. And the only thing that brought all of us down was politics. Politics. It was nothing more than politics. At the end of the day, it was just politicians and people deciding to stop fighting. But we never were really defeated, and we caused problems for the blacks that were so gargantuan that there are black countries that took decades to even try and get out of those problem areas. To give you an example, Mozambique, which was a Portuguese colony, spent decades as the poorest country in the world as a direct consequence of actions of wars, black-on-black wars that were actually started by the whites. We whites got the blacks to kill each other. And Zimbabwe currently is the second poorest country in the world, and it's because it got rid of only 5,000 white farmers, and it's now the second poorest country in the world. Its economy totally fucked, and the whites in Zimbabwe, right at the very end, the whites in Zimbabwe were outnumbered 130-1, and still they actually had control of black politics. And if they'd had weapons, they and the blacks could have still won. It was so fucking close. Even outnumbered 130-1. That's why I just want to tell all whites everywhere, don't ever give up. We pack lots of punch. You know, the Jews, when the Jews number 2% and 4%, they have some influence. In Zimbabwe, they were down to less than 1%. And they were still a dominant force in the country. So don't give up. Whites, don't give up. We rock. And we need to just focus and face all our enemies. We can smash them all. There's no need to be afraid. Don't be afraid. So that's just a quick little touch on it.
Awesome. Jan, and really, guys.
The best is yet to come.
Exactly. If you can check out his 50 Years of Race War, I myself am very interested in that because I always took great interest, and maybe we should discuss it sometime again. And also, I think if there is one thing that I think our American audience and European audience would enjoy is if we could one day discuss the South African boy from Potchefstroom that shook the hand of Adolf Hitler.
Oh, wow. Is that Robbie Leibrand? Robbie Leibrand.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah, and I still have to put out a thing on Hendrik Verwoerd. He was an actual Nazi. I can now prove it conclusively.
Absolutely.
He was a total Nazi. So that means that makes him the second Adolf Hitler who ran a country. And just like the real Adolf Hitler, his track record was exemplary. Lowest crime, most law and order, most progress, all happened on his shift.
I mean, that's such an interesting talk that we shouldn't get into it, but I mean, we developed under Verwoerd machines amidst heavy sanctions. Whenever we didn't have machines, we just developed it. We just, white people, I want to mirror the sentiments of Jan, that white people are defiant in the face of danger. The only thing that gets to us is politics. Because as I witness in my day-to-day life, white people don't tend to pay too much mind to it. Only the corrupt element within our societies usually pay a mind to it. So, or in these circumstances.
And the only reason whites have problems is because we've all been divided by stupid Jewish politics. If we stuck to the issue of race, we'd all be home free. We'd agree on everything. Whites are the same everywhere. I've spoken to whites from Eastern Europe and everywhere, and I got to tell you, whites are the same people. We have the same values. We are the same race, and we must stick together. And we mustn't. We must never lose our confidence in ourselves as a people, as a group, as a race. Don't do that. You've been told that people were defeated who weren't really defeated. I mean, and the same is true for Adolf Hitler and the Germans. I mean, the feats that those people pulled off were beyond belief. Absolutely just science fiction, man. It reads like science fiction even today.
It is. That's true.
75 years ago. Okay. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And I myself in Rhodesia, you know, we were such a small community. We didn't have the science and technology of South Africa. But, you know, when they put sanctions on us, when they stopped things, suddenly you see whites becoming creative. And that's why I say bring on the war, man. Bring on the war. Yes. Bring on the trouble. You're gonna see how clever white people really are. You're gonna see how clever they are, how organized they are, how brave they are. You're gonna see all kinds of sides to white people that you wouldn't know existed. And I've seen enough of whites in other countries that I'm telling you that they're exactly the same. It's just that they've been conditioned into stupidity. They've been made to lose confidence in themselves. Put them under pressure and you'll see what they will do. They are absolutely fine. They're actually wonderful. There's nothing wrong with us. Basically, I think the white race just needs a good fucking world war. That's what we need. It's going to be good for us. We will rock. You'll see the things we'll do. All these others Absolutely. that you imagine are powers. They don't amount to a hill of beans, man.
Exactly.
You'll see
that's,
when the white white man rolls. You're gonna hear screaming and my personal favorite is I always like to tell people, watch the blacks trample each other to death. They'll be running so fast they'll trample each other to death. And I actually even showed it in one of my videos. There was a video I did called What Napoleon Would Teach White South Africans. If you get a chance, watch the video, What Napoleon Would Teach White South Africans. In there, I've got actual film footage. You'll see the actual film footage. And I just remind people, there you can see it for yourself. If whites rocked, you'd see how they'd shit bricks. The blacks, if I may just add one final one. The blacks, if the whites had to attack the blacks, even though we are 9% of the population, you'd probably find them going to the United Nations and everywhere and saying, help, help, help. There are 4 million whites and they're attacking us and we're only 50 million. Help, help. They're going to kill us. You think I'm joking. I'm not kidding.
I'm laughing because, I laugh because I say you either laugh at something because it's completely ridiculous or it's completely true. And it's completely true. That's why I laugh because there's this instance in an Afrikaans university, Pretoria Universiteit, right? They had this open Stellenbosch policy where they brought English into the, basically pushing out Afrikaans of the tertiary sector in education, right? And there was this sea of blacks, literally hundreds, if not thousands, right? That were chanting, down, Afrikaans must fall, Afrikaans must fall, right?
Okay.
And between them, I can't find the video, but I'll look for it. And if I find it, I'll send it to you and you'll love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so then there's this blacks. They're standing between there's this police officers. They're standing between the blacks and the white kids. And then one of the blacks, they jump over the police and they hit one of these white guys, one of these boera. And whilst they're chanting Afrikaans was full, the whites are saying Afrikaans sal bly, you know, Afrikaans will stay. And as soon as that black hit that guy, right, you wouldn't believe the white kids, they were numerically outnumbered like you wouldn't believe it, but they ran over the black police officers and those blacks that were so taunting them, they dispersed like a bomb had fallen between them. They were running
you
for the Hilton County.
Excellent.
No,
excellent.
Promise you.
find me the video. I fucking want that video. I want it. I want it.
When
I've got
I
a
saw
video
that, when I saw that, the goosebumps were literally, I was shrouded by it. It was the most fucking amazing thing I ever saw. I wished that I was there. Can I just say it that way?
I'm telling you, you know, we are in a growth phase. I think let me end by saying we're in a growth phase, all of us. And don't worry about all the things that are happening to all of us. It is pain, it is suffering, but we are changing. And what's going to come out of it is the new white man and the new white woman. And they're not going to be liberal. And
absolutely.
They're going
well,
to be,
I've heard of that sentiment.
And they're going to be something different. And you're going to see a whole new thing. I still believe the world is ours. I'm telling you, the world is ours. So, Jack, it's been really awesome. We've been live streaming. And I see that our audience even grew and they even stuck around for over 2 hours. So thank you very much for listening. And
it's been a pleasure having you. And I think that we'll do this regularly, since 2 hours really isn't enough to cover all of the things that I think we can cover. So thanks for coming on. Guys in the chat, History Reviewed, visit Jan's website and you can see some of his work there that he puts out. He does really good and thorough research. And he has been, I think, an inspiration to many whites around the world with his writings. And also, what it does is, even though they shut us down, just remember that you're not isolated. There are many, many more people that feel the exact same way that you do. And we will not fall prey to all of their attacks. It is just molding us into a greater state of being. So with that, have a blessed week, everybody, and thank you for tuning in.
Thank you very much, Jack.